And the more I read, the more I just, it wasn't just about the educational aspects and the benefits for my children, but the whole vision for parenting and childhood, just the wonder in childhood, believing in childhood, drawing out of who they are, all that just clicked with who we were as a family anyway. You know, and even before I read any of this, I was the mother playing Mozart to babies in the womb. You know, that was always my childhood. I wasn't home educated, but I grew up in a house where there was art on the walls. My parents were always reading. We were always out in nature. And my dad played all sorts of beautiful music for us. So that was already this kind of baseline of my upbringing. So then you find something that speaks of that, then you're bound to kind of go, oh yes, this is right. This is where we go. Yeah, there was no turning back.
That's Leah Bowden, also known as Modern Miss Mason. Leah is wife to Dave and mom to four fabulous children. She is a home educator and has been building upon the foundations of the Charlotte Mason philosophy with her children for the past 15 years. She's a firm believer in peace, freedom, and individuality in their homeschool environments, and she teaches this over at Modern Miss Mason. Leah is also a coach, writer, speaker, and podcaster. So grab a seat by the fire as we travel to Coventry, England, and discuss how to integrate the early 20th century Charlotte Mason philosophy into a 21st century home. All right, so good morning, or should I actually say good afternoon, Leah, and welcome to the Homeschool Project podcast. How are you doing?
I'm doing really well. So great to be here with you.
Yes. Thank you so much for coming. We usually just like to jump right in with an introduction. If you can just begin with sharing a little bit about yourself, your family, and what it is you do.
Sure. Yeah. So my name's Leah, and I'm originally from the north of England, from Yorkshire, but my husband and I live in Coventry, which is right in the middle of the UK. It's probably about two and a half hours north of London. So people normally know where London is. So we're right in the middle. We live with our four children, two sons, two daughters, and a dog and a rabbit, actually. I'm just thinking, how many other pets can you get in there? And my husband works for a school education charity. He's a director there. So we actually have our feet in the education system and in home education. So we're quite an unusual setup, really. And I've been home educating my children for nearly 15 years. And my two older ones are now pursuing career and further education. And I have two left at home. And amidst that kind of home educating journey, I have picked up seemingly a bit of a writing career, and I'm also a coach and a speaker, which is amazing, really. And that all kind of slots in the fringe hours. My main role is still very much home educating my children, so, which is a great privilege. Amazing.
It is. It really is. So what are their ages?
My eldest is nearly 19. Next one is just about to turn 17. They're all summer birthdays, lots of them. So they're kind of just tilting over there. And then I have a 4-year gap. And then when we thought we were done, and then no, we weren't. And then I have a 13-year-old and a 10-year-old. So my youngest 10-year-old girl, she is, as often these youngest childs are, she's the life and soul of the house. She keeps us on our toes, but it's great fun.
Oh, great. I was just actually looking at some of your photos this morning and how she dove into the very cold river. Yes. Brave child.
So we went to a place called Derbyshire, the Peak District yesterday, and we climbed this. I mean, I want to call it a mountain because it felt like a mountain.
It looked like it from the photos to me.
Okay. if you say it does, I'm going to go with mountain. But we did. It was a really good climb with our nature group. And at the end, we said we were going to play in the water. Well, summer in the UK can get decent. I mean, it can get fairly warm. It will probably be a warm California day, you know, if I'm out all over the state. So but at the moment it's actually quite chilly, and the water in the river was freezing. That all the mothers, we all put our feet in and we couldn't cope with anything else. But two of the 10-year-olds, they just kind of started to wade in and then go up to their thighs, then go up to their waist. Next thing I look around, she's swimming in it. I'm like, how do you do that? No. No fear, no inhibition, just nothing. And that is exactly a reflection of her personality. Yeah. Her and I are quite different. It's good fun.
Our kids are the same way. So we moved from Florida, which is very warm here in the States, to Ohio 2 years ago. And our kids were born and raised in the South. And we didn't know how they were going to do. Well, they have taken to this weather quite well. Every time we go someplace, no matter the season, they pretty much jump in that water.
Good for them.
We did do like a polar bear plunge as a family in the winter.
Oh, I love it.
They will only do that for sake of saying we've done a polar bear plunge in the winter. But even like you said, when the water is like really cold here, like we just went to Michigan. And Lake Michigan is still very cold. Like,
I'm sure it is. Yeah.
This is like mid 50s, which when you say that out loud, it doesn't sound that bad, but it's actually really cold water.
It is compared to kind of body temperature and what it's, yeah, it's very different. Yeah. It's interesting because my other younger son that we took yesterday, he is much more cerebral than physical. So he is a head person and he even with the walk, you could see he was like, okay, I'm hot now, I'm done. Whereas she's like up like a mountain goat, you know. So he kind of think he tipped his put his toes in and then ended up putting his socks back on and she was like, I'm done. And she just, it's so different, isn't it? Each child you recognize in, especially in those situations, it's so glaringly obvious the people that they are, you know, this is a reflection of their personality, but also who they're growing into and how you work with that, you know, and how you nurture that and celebrate it also, celebrate the differences.
Absolutely. Yes. So how is it that, especially with your husband's career, that you guys came to decide to homeschool your children?
So we actually both have somewhat of a background with, youth and children's work was definitely our thing. Before I started homeschooling, my degree's in sociology and my work was working with children and young people who were kind of almost getting kicked out of the school system. So I was working with the kids who it hadn't worked for and we're on the verge of being they call it exclusion here. I don't know what they call it in the States, but where they throw them out of the school system. Mm-hmm. And I was kind of working with them and their families. So we both were very much in not the teaching and academic side of school life, but pastoral support, behavior, emotional stuff. So we both have been very involved with that. And that was before homeschooling. So what happened for me, before I met Dave and we got married, I graduated from university, spent a year in St. Louis, Missouri, of all places. And it was kind of like a Bible school, but not accredited to anything. It was like just a discipleship program kind of thing. And I did that for a year. And so there I was in my very early 20s. I'd never heard of homeschooling before, never come across it in the UK, didn't know anybody who had ever done that. And I met this community of homeschoolers and was actually, to tell you the truth, I was pretty bowled over. I was pretty impressed, if I can use that word, by the children and their ability to converse with me. You know, normally kids, like, they might just get eye contact and say hello and then they're off playing. But they were interested, I think because I was British, you know, they were interested in me, wanting to talk. Their families seemed very together and just had a different emphasis on parenting and family life. And even at my young age and not being married and not even thinking about family, I remember thinking, this actually is very appealing to me. And I always say that's where the seed was sown. Like, I remember thinking, I think I'd like to do that one day. Well, zoom on, you know, Dave and I are married. We've got our couple of children and they start school pretty early here, like 4. I guess it would be like kindergarten. Is that 5? I don't know. Anyway,
kindergarten's 5. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So maybe a bit younger than that. They even start some kind of system here. So we enrolled Naya into the school system. She had like a little uniform, you know, and a book bag, a red book bag. And I remember walking down the street on her first day and she's holding my hand and holding this book bag, and we could walk to school. It was that close. And it just went through my head, I never wanted to do this. This is not what I wanted to do. And it was like that seed came out. It was like suddenly it started to grow. I was not aware of it. But, and Dave and I had just not had the conversation. We'd not even gone there. And so she started in the school system and we started researching homeschooling. We were like, this, we don't want this, you know, and here we both are. We know the school system well. We are very integrated with that. And even today, I can honestly say we're not, it's not that we're against it. There are many, many benefits. And we can see that the you know, how it's a great need in a country, in a society, to support the welfare of children, because not everyone can do this. But we knew we'd got an opportunity here to try this out and to have a go. You know, so the first thing I Googled was, is homeschooling legal in England? Because I had no clue. I just didn't have a clue. So really, we, you know, this began our journey of discovery. You know, we were kind of trying to find other homeschoolers, read as much as we can. And as you can imagine, most of the reading and research I was finding, there wasn't social media then. So I was reading blogs and it was all American. Wow. So I was trying to grasp at how does it look in this country now. And what we discovered, it was completely legal, not illegal. It was legal. And you had complete freedom to do what you wanted, basically. So we were like, let's do this. We deregistered her. And then my other children have never been to any institution. And the rest is history, you know. And we always said, each child an individual. We'll watch each child as they grow and see what their needs are. Our initial commitment to ourselves was to see them through the primary years for us. That's up to about the age of 11. But actually, I remember it just slipping over their birthdays, and we ended up having, you know, a 12-year-old, 13-year-old, and we just were like, oh, we're still going. We're still doing it. Let's just keep going. We're still here and we're still happy. And together, so it's just been incredible. And now, you know, I met two homeschoolers. This is the early 2000s. I met two homeschoolers. And now there are, you know, it's huge over here. And there are large, thriving communities all across the UK. And so much so, actually, over the past few years, the government has started twitching a little bit, wanting to kind of bring a little bit more restriction or structure. That hasn't happened yet. Mm-hmm. And that's amazing, really, to say we've been doing it that long. But I know there are various states where it is a little bit more restricted.
Yes.
So it probably will happen. I mean, there are countries in Europe where it's illegal. So yes, Germany, you can't even go there. You know, you'd be imprisoned if you tried that. So we are grateful for the freedom we've got and for the amount of time we've been doing this for.
Absolutely. I agree. And what a neat story, how you, like, the seed was planted before children. I mean,
I know.
Is now looking at it, I was that parent, you know, because we both worked too. And our daughter, our oldest, actually did go to school all the way through second grade. And I was that parent that I, like, loved sending her to the private preschool in that uniform and finding that prestigious school and, you know, seeing how, like, at 4 years old, they had their little things and cubbies. And now when I look at it, it's like with a whole another set of eyes. And yeah. I'm just like, no, there's something, in my opinion, obviously, again, it doesn't work for everybody, but for me, it's just, there's something more beautiful than that now. And that's just amazing that you got to, like, you saw that, you already saw the benefit of that early on, where it was actually my husband had to convince me.
And that's, you know, and so many stories are like that. It's either one or the other, isn't it? Mm-hmm. And I know with Dave, it wasn't so much the convincing. I think he could see the, I think it was more to do with the big picture of our life.
Yes.
It wasn't always to do with the kids, but you sacrifice a salary, you know, you suddenly a one income family and you sacrifice my time and what else I can get involved. And there was so much of that we had to really, and we were very much when we say yes, we say yes, we're going to do this and we're going to see this through. It wasn't going to be, let's test it out for 6 months. We were never going to do that. It wasn't fair on our children. So I was very patient and we were like sending articles to each other and it was hilarious. He has a different side to the story. And as ever, you know, I was like running 100 miles ahead and he was just catching up. But we both, we don't regret it for a minute, not at all.
That's great. Well, you obviously integrate Charlotte Mason's philosophy into your children's education, which is one of the many reasons why we invited you on. We're doing this home ed series, and part of it is introducing our listeners who are new to home education to some of the different learning philosophies.
Amazing.
Well, we're hoping. We have a good lineup. I'm super excited. And the different speakers we have that we're going to be releasing, they're just so knowledgeable, including yourself, that we're really excited. So can we start with you giving us a brief history of who the wonderful Charlotte Mason was?
Sure. Yeah. So Charlotte Mason was a late 19th, early 20th century revolutionary educator, came from a very working class British background, was orphaned at 16. And really, as she was very limited in her resources and what her future aspirations were, that she teaching was a lot of thing what often young girls went into. You know, they would start by helping and but before she knew it, she was teaching. There is a wonderful story. There's a couple of biographies about Charlotte Mason, and I get them mixed up all the time after having read both of them. But she, one of them tells a story of her being a little girl with her mother and seeing a lady in a street somewhere gathered with children gathered around her, and she was in awe of this woman and said to her mother, you know, who is she and what does she do? And her mom said, she's a teacher. And she apparently from that moment had this kind of, I think that's what I want to do, which is amazing. Again, these stories are really lovely. So at the 16, some interesting things about her life. She'd always struggled with ill health and she lived into her 80s, but right all the way through the story of her life, she struggled with illness. They think it was a heart issue, but very, you know, Victorians, you never know what was going on. But she began that love for caring for children, for teaching philosophy. And so I think the philosophy of teaching and education became quite an early fascination. And she began to kind of work her way up through working at different schools, having different jobs, kind of working, I guess, got more of a leadership positions in training others. And it wasn't really until she got into her mid to late 40s, which is encouraging for a lot of us. Yes. Not everything happens early in life, ladies. She got to her mid to late 40s and she was up in the north of England. In fact, in the city where I was born, in Bradford. And she was, her friends were doing this fundraiser at a church building or something for a mission. And she didn't have any money to give. And she said, look, let me do some lectures. I will offer some lectures. And she studied and worked really, really hard and prepared these lectures, which she gave. And I guess people bought tickets or paid to come. And those were the beginning of Volume 1 Home Education. Those lectures that came out of a place of charity and giving became the beginning of this incredible inspirational philosophy that people just were like, wow, what is this? This is incredible. You know, long story cut short, it ends up with a publisher and the book starts to do the rounds. And people start to write to her saying how much it's changed their thinking around their motherhood, their children's lives and education. And she starts to build this then, and she ends up in Ambleside in the Lake District, where she sets up something called the School of Education. So we, as home educators, know her as this kind of educational philosopher, and she, you know, we've applied it all to home education as we know it. But actually, she was writing to train governesses, teachers. She set up schools. but also she spoke into the importance of the home and the beginnings in the home. And what she called home education isn't really what we probably what it looks like today. But also you got to remember, some children really, that was their only option, was to be taught at home. She was taught at home by her mum. So, but it wasn't at all like us, you know, being all revolutionary and homeschooling and all, you know, it was so different. Yeah. So this began this thing. She set up a school of education. It's called Scale How. The building's still there. It needs a lot of love and a lot of work, but the building's still there. It's incredible. And, you know, here she is, you know, probably late 40s, early 50s. And that is what we know of Charlotte Mason generally all started there. So she then, you know, what we have is 6 volumes of work. She started a correspondence course for parents and teachers all over the country and then all over the world called the PNEU. She started a magazine called The Parents Review. And then she just was a prolific writer. And but also what I really love, I love reading about her. So I've read all her stuff, but I love reading about her. So there's a beautiful collection called In Memoriam. And after she died, they gathered testimonials about her life. And there's, I don't know if you've ever been to a funeral. And sorry, my daughter is walking in the door, so that she's the oldest one. She won't disturb us. Real life people. if you've ever been to a funeral or something where people are talking about someone's life and you think, gosh, I never knew that about them. I wish I knew that, yeah, you know, before. And you read this book like this, you just think, wow, the observations of her and of her character, of her disciplined life, of her reading life, of even though she was so busy, she was always kind and she always gave time for conversation and time for people. And some of those things have just been incredible for me to hear, that it's not just this, you know, philosophy that is something that you is unreachable and highly academic, and I know we'll get into some of the application of that, but it can feel like this really far-reaching, I mean, you say the word philosophy, it can be really overwhelming.
Yeah.
But actually, yeah, she was a person, you know, she was a person who had these beautiful ideas. She was never married, she was never a mother. So some people find that difficult, but she spent all her working life and even from the age of 16 being around children, mothers, teachers, governesses. So if that's not research, I don't know what is. So, yeah, I mean, you know, that is a potted kind of story and history of her life, which just scratches the surface, but a really incredible lady.
Yeah, definitely. So did all of her 6 volumes get published while she was alive?
No, okay. Volume 6 was after she died. Yeah.
But 5 out of the 6, I didn't know that. Wow.
Yeah. Wow. Amazing. And there's so many of depending on where you are or how much you want to know about the Charlotte Mason philosophy, you know, she wrote poetry, she wrote devotional books, she wrote geography books for children. There's tons. Some are not even, you can't even get them unless you want to spend hundreds and hundreds of dollars, you know, from some antique online thing. But yeah, she just spent her life writing and sharing her knowledge and wisdom, and she would learn something, discover something, write about it. And also very vulnerably, she'd often say, you know, like, well, I'm just figuring this out. We're all learning this for ourselves. But yeah, it's a pretty amazing life.
I think many of us need to hear that too. Just figuring it out as we go.
Absolutely. We all are. That's right. Yeah.
So I realize that it will take time to get to know and understand her work, as you have explained, it's quite a bit, including her 20 principles, right?
That's right.
But for those listening who may have never even heard of this style of learning, philosophy, whatever you want to call it, what would you say are the key takeaways or highlights of this learning style? Like if you were to compare to other learning methods, like these are the things that really make the Charlotte Mason education.
Yeah, there's definitely some standout. That's a great question. So whenever somebody asks me, where do I start with the Charlotte Mason philosophy, I will challenge them on their view of children and their view of education. So how do you see children, you know, and how do you view their connection with the ability to learn? And what Charlotte Mason, her first principle was children are born persons. And this is key. Now, this is key because, I mean, I call it an inside out, upside down educational philosophy, because actually traditional education spoon feeds children, no matter how many, you know, how nice you want to say it is and how we want to kind of, you know, decorate that term, it is spoon feeding. We are saying, you know, any syllabus and generally any curriculum is saying this is what a child should learn at this stage, and this is how they should take it in, and this is what it should mean to them. And that's where we get testing and standardized stuff. What Charlotte Mason said is, well, hang on, children are, when they're born, they are whole. So they're not something we fill. They are actually completely whole. And what we have to do as the parent educator, we have to provide an environment of stimulus and books and experiences, whatever it is. There's so much detail in that. That actually, when they connect with it, it draws out of who they are rather than us putting into what we think they should be. Now, that might blow your mind. I'm thinking, what are you, where do I go with that? But actually, if you can start there, if you believe that children are whole and that they are ready to learn and absolutely brilliant little human beings, then actually you're on to a good start. Mm-hmm. Because what she said was then, you know, education, the second thing was, is education is the science of relations. It's about relationship. So what you do is you recognize, okay, here's this whole being. So I'm going to expose them to brilliant living books, which is another one of her things, which I'll mention in a moment. You know, she talks about being outside in nature a lot. That's very key to her philosophy. She wants this a real rich foundation of cultural capital, which is stuff like, you know, theatre and music and poetry and art, this rich exposure to this, which they, again, you're not doing lectures on art history. You're literally showing them a painting and saying, what do you see? Mm-hmm. And that is the beautiful simplistic method that you're saying, I believe that you have got stuff in you already. So let me bring some stimulus around and see what comes out. It's amazing. And mm-hmm. after years and years of doing it, it sounds so simple, but actually it honors the child as a person, which is, you know, for me, a lot about what home education is. We're saying we're taking them out of this standardized testing environment, and we're saying, hey, let me let you learn. And she talks about a child digging for knowledge, like letting them do the work themselves rather than us getting a spoon and saying, this is what history is, this is what you should know, this is a timeline, you know, understand it, grasp it. So there's a huge amount of trust in the methodology, there really mm-hmm. is. But then you begin to see, you know, the fruit of it as the years go by. So I mentioned living books, that's a big part of it as well. She said children need to be around writers, authors, poets who are passionate about the subject they are writing about. But she talked about dry, boring mm-hmm. textbooks. And you all know the difference. It's so clear. You open a book and there are nice pictures and there are lists of facts and dates, and it might inform you, but it doesn't add to your knowledge. And more than that, it doesn't help you care about the subject, the person, whatever it is. What a living book does is often, they're not just storybooks, but they often have a narrative way of telling a story. This can be across all subjects. They've often got one really passionate author. So you read the first two pages and you want to read on. You know, and they're often you want to read on. You, it's kind of turn page turners. And you, a good test of this, of a living book as well, is you can read a paragraph, put it down, and you can retell, not word for word, but you can retell the, in your own words, what you've just read. And that's what she called narration. Mm-hmm. So again, narration was a big part. And this is about connecting the writer, the stimulus, the living books with the child is through something called narration. And narration is the art of telling something back. So we all know, when you teach something, so the fact that I'm telling you this today and telling you more and more about the Charlotte Mason philosophy actually embeds it in my long-term memory more than ever. So I love doing it. I love talking about it. I love teaching it. I love writing about it because it becomes a greater part of me and I own it. And that's what happens with children is you read about, you might be reading a nature storybook about a beaver and you're not just saying a beaver has this and has this many legs and does this kind of activity. You're reading a story about a beaver and then they'll tell you back that story, which Charlotte Mason then says goes into their they own it for themselves. It almost goes into their long-term memory and becomes theirs, but you own it. Because you got to talk about it. Mm-hmm. So again, I say these things after 15 years of reading about it and actually being a practitioner, but these are some of the key elements really to the philosophy. So I've never bought a curriculum. I've never used a curriculum. I've never, in all these years, we do use an online program to help with maths because of where the kids have to get to for the UK once they get older. Apart from that, I have really taken the foundations of this philosophy and taught myself these methods and applied them with my children. And it's amazing. And they really are life-giving methods.
And your two that have moved on, are they doing okay?
Yeah, they're doing good. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
No the curriculum one, and they're doing okay.
No. So my eldest, it's always interesting, isn't it, when you hear people talking about homeschooling, like, what are you big kids doing? So my eldest has just finished the UK sixth form and she studied sciences. So I don't know where that came from. I mean, I'm like, how did you do chemistry, physics and biology? Because we did biology a lot, but I don't think I ever really did a much... from a focus point of view, chemistry or physics, but there she was pursuing this. Wow. Yeah. And she wants to be a paramedic. So she's heading into a career in healthcare. Awesome. And then my next son, he's more of a practical hands-on kid really than a kind of heady academic one. And he's pursuing a trade. He's training to be an electrician. So he's super smart and bright and just loves working with his hands. So like I said, from the beginning, each child's an individual and that's really how we wanted to see each child. So isn't that amazing? I never, the beginning reasons why we never bought curriculums because we couldn't afford one. Yeah. So we knew we'd got this conviction to start homeschooling, but I didn't have the money to be spending hundreds of pounds on stuff. So I thought, I'd already started reading Charlotte Mason's work before we started, like while we were researching. And I was like, well, I think I can do this. We can go to the library. We can buy secondhand books. We can, and that's where it began, was me kind of going, well, this has kind of forced my hand, but it is how we've always been now. And that's just the story of our life now.
That's so funny. That's actually the same for us. Because same thing, like we took away my income. I'm a registered nurse and it was a huge pay cut for our household. And when I was researching, we actually, Charlotte Mason's actually the backbone to our home education as well. But even when I'm looking at, when I was trying to get started and looking at the different, which I'll ask you about later, Charlotte Mason programs, they were so expensive. And I'm like, I cannot get myself to do this. And yes, it would have been easier because you're paying, I think, more for, they're doing everything for you, breaking it down. And I was just, I couldn't do it. And so we followed kind of like a version of Ambleside. It's called Mater Amoebalis.
I know it. Yeah.
You do. Okay. Yeah. And we don't follow it to the T, but it did help, especially as a new homeschooler, to kind of give a little bit of structure and everything was free. And then just having those book lists whenever I kind of didn't know where to go with something.
Yeah.
And I found that, like you said, it's crazy because it can be so simple. And we'll be moving on to year three. So we're still at the beginning in my mind.
Oh.
And I will second guess myself, like, is this enough? But then when I think about all the things that have kind of flourished over the years, I had to write some of these down because I'll just forget. That's how I am. One of the main things that I absolutely love about her method is the feast of the subjects and how it's actually enriched all of our lives, including me as a parent. Like, you know, we're learning alongside them. We're That's gaining right. all of this enrichment, which is amazing. But like my kids are more observant now when we go on our nature hikes, and then they're eager to go and research when we get home. My son, most of the time, makes me research right then and there on the nature hike because he wants to know the answer.
Yeah.
And then, or we'll see like a painting out in public. And I love it when they can actually identify it. Like I've shared this story before in our podcast, but it's the one that really like just sticks out to me. And it's, we were in Disney World with my uncle, and I was walking with my uncle, and then our son was 5 at the time, and we're walking by this cafe, and my son's like, "Look, Mama, it's Vincent van Gogh's painting." And my uncle like looks and he's like, what
are you teaching them?
Why does this 5-year-old know this work? Or like even when we're listening to the classical radio station and they can actually recognize Handel's Water Music. Like they'll know that it's his water music. And I'm like, oh my gosh. And then my all-time favorite is our kids will go on their own and do poetry tea time whenever Nathan and I have to record a podcast episode. And it just blows my mind. Like they want to do this. Like we're not even part of it. And they're doing it together as siblings on their own. And even this morning when I was sitting having breakfast, the last one at the table with me was the 4-year-old. And I was explaining to him, I tried to give him a heads up, like, Mama's going to go and record a podcast episode. And he goes, "We're going to do poetry tea time then." And
I'm like, I love it.
But these are the moments where you're like, yeah, it's simple, but like you said, it's because our children are whole and we're just like helping extract that out of them by enriching their lives. And I'm starting to finally see that a couple of years in, and it's totally worth it.
Yeah, absolutely is. Yeah,
same with the narrations. I've seen the benefits. Like I used to be skeptical, like this just seems so simple. Like they're just gonna tell me back what they heard, you know, like what is this gonna do? But our daughter who, like I told you, had, we had pulled her out after second grade to home educate. She was doing fine in school and she went to a private school that was really small. So they had small classes and everything. She loved school for what she knew was school. I think she liked the socialization part and being with all that, but she'd never had a love for reading. And then when we started home educating and then reading these very rich living books and having her begin the narrating, it was like a fire in her that woke up. Amazing. And like now she's like every night in her bed reading books. She's reading books to her brothers. Like, I love it. So yeah, I just have to attest to this method, how it's just worked so beautifully for our family.
Very good.
So why did you choose Charlotte Mason for your family?
Yeah, I think she was one of the, her philosophy was one of the first, for some reason, that I came across when I was researching homeschooling. And, you know, I think I was coming across so much information from that was American, that to discover a British educator who was influencing and part of the homeschooling movement, I was like, oh, okay, this kind of pricked up my ear and my eye, really. And so as I began to look into it, there was no looking back for me. I mean, I'd kind of looked at some other stuff. I'd looked at Steiner and even the British National Curriculum, which is kind of, I don't know how I don't know if anybody could do that at home. I don't think, not only why would you, but how. There's so much, it's so much in it. So I'd kind of been looking and dabbling with different things. And the more I read about the Charlotte Mason philosophy, it just felt right. It just was, and not to sound, so easily persuaded by something like a feeling, but actually it reminded me a little bit of my late 1970s, early 1980s, my own young education in England, where I think probably what I was remembering is some of her influences in the country had very, very, very watered down, but were almost still part of the heart of the classroom. We used to keep nature tables and we'd have reading corners, and I don't know if it's much the same anymore, but it just felt comforting, everything about it. And the more I read, the more I just, it wasn't just about the educational aspects and the benefits for my children, but the whole vision for parenting and childhood, just the wonder in childhood, believing in childhood, drawing out of who they are, all that just clicked with who we were as a family anyway. You know, and even before I read any of this, I was the mother playing Mozart to babies in the womb. You know, that was always my childhood. I wasn't home educated, but I grew up in a house where there was art on the walls. My parents were always reading. We were always out in nature. And my dad played all sorts of beautiful music for us. So that was already this kind of baseline of my upbringing. So then you find something that speaks of that, then you're bound to kind of go, oh, yes, this is right. This is where we go. So, there was no turning back. I just was hook, line, and sinker. This is definitely right for me. But right from the beginning, right from even the first discovery of it, I knew I had to find my way with it. And I'm quite an independent person anyway, maybe a little bit rebellious, some would say, I don't know, for the good. But I say this all the time, like I don't even follow recipes to the T. I always change everything. So try and give me a program, I am not going to follow that. No way. My question is always, how does this look for my family and my children? Mm. And so that is really how I've got my reputation within the Charlotte Mason circles, for good or for bad. But that's how it is for our family and our life. And I know that it is. The approach is just bringing freedom to many, many families.
Yeah. So now that you've explained some of her philosophy, can you kind of paint us a picture of what this might look like in action? Maybe for those that need kind of a visual, okay, well, these are like the key points of hers, but how does that look in a day in a life or maybe in a week for your family?
Yeah, it's difficult to do that. I'll try a little bit. Okay. I try to avoid being prescriptive because for a couple of reasons, and everybody who follows me will know this, I don't ever give out timetables, day in the life. I do occasionally will do a little video of this is maybe one example of what a day looks like. I don't give out book lists because people then read it as this kind of religious thing that you must follow. And so I'm not going to do that. Just to say that's kind of people will say, oh, she never does this. And also the second reason is because it changes all the time. It changes. Yeah. And it changes with each season of childhood. It changes with each season of our family life. It changes if I get a new creative idea and I'm like, oh, let's do it this way. But this is what I'll tell you. For the whole of our home educating life, we have prioritized rhythm in the day. So we have a rhythm. So I am I do my own planning. I curate my own curriculum. A curriculum just basically means what you've chosen to study. So people don't, you know, it's not like either or. People don't need to be afraid of that. So I curate everything myself. I choose my own books whilst reading around and being inspired by other lists. But rhythm is, I believe, is really important for children. It brings a security of them knowing what's going to happen next. Some of my children, that is more important for them than others. They needed to know what are we doing. So without fail, we have never faltered from this. Our mourning is, and before I even knew there was a name for it or it was branded, we had a form of mourning time, mourning basket, mourning gathering. I can't remember what I even called it, but really, it, for me, it made sense to gather them around food. So we would have breakfast together, and then I would have a pile of books on the table while we were making breakfast. Classical music would be on. And then we would begin. We're a Christian family, so we would begin with Bible and prayer. Then we would have a poem. Then there would be a read aloud we would do at the morning. And then generally we do. We have a diary that runs all the year through with nature observations, just so we've always got something we can draw if we want to. We jot down the temperature from the day. You know, that all that happens in the morning. So we have this. Three parts of our day, which is, and this has changed again when we had all four at home, it looked quite, but that morning gathering happens without fail. Mm-hmm. And we call that gathered learning. So that's gathered learning. And then we go into a time that I call going solo, where the children have a time of independent study. So this is where they would do things like copy work, map study. They have a book that a biography or another book that they're reading for themselves, that I assign. What else are they doing that time? Their times tables practice. They might even use that time to do prepared. I know some of these phrases people might not know yet, but they might do some prep for a dictation for mm-hmm. later in the day. So that's going solo. That is their independent study. They will do a maths lesson in that time. And that is the bit where I'll come alongside them. So it's not completely on their own. And when I had older children and younger children, I would work in two blocks. So while what I would do in that time, while one group were doing their independent study, I would work one-on-one or one-on-two with the others. Mm. And then we flip it. So people often say, how do you do it with four children or six or whatever people have? And I'm like, you just got to organize it. You know, you just got to do this, that shuffling round and be confident about it. Just do it. It's like, this is what we're doing. And then, so gathered learning, going solo, and then we do group learning. And that is when we'll do more subject-driven stuff. So history, geography, you know, science experiments. And that's where, now at the moment, it's the same two children that are doing the gathered learning, but mm-hmm. it's a different emphasis. So they'll go off and do their independent study, and then there might be lunch or cleaning rabbits out or doing chores in between that. And then we'll come back and then we'll do a more subject specific. And that's, you know, where you'll have your narrations and more. So that's kind of how definitely 4 days of the week look. And then Friday is just a little bit more flexible because my husband and I do a little bit more church work on that day. And that Friday is often we'll do more creative stuff. We'll do stuff with friends, you know, and the afternoons are more, nowadays we're finishing around 1-2. Some afternoons we're out doing groups. We do a nature group. We're out in the, you know, out doing a nature walk. Some afternoons I'm doing things like this, and I just say, okay, you guys have got a couple of hours free time. So, you know, it definitely changes with each season of the child's life. And we haven't wrapped up for the summer yet. We do take a summer break, but we won't finish for a couple of weeks. And that's when I start to assess each child. Okay, how has this year gone? What does it look like for them in this coming year? How can we best provide for them and bring out the best in them of the skills they're showing and the interests they're showing. So yeah, those three, that's probably a helpful way to understand how we pull out the rhythm of our days, that kind of gathered learning, which people might know as morning time. Going solo and group learning. And then somehow within that, we fit all these lovely short lessons in.
Wonderful. I love it. Now, can you just briefly describe dictation?
Yeah, so prepared dictation, Charlotte Mason recommended starting around the age of 9 or 10. And this is where you take a passage from a living book, or I often use famous speeches or really, you know, cool quotes, maybe like a C.S. Lewis quote or anything really, but you use a living passage And then you set aside a time with the child. You can write it out for them, or you can, I print it out. And they sit and look at it. And then the first thing they do is, this is how we do anyway. I give them, they'll have a highlighter pen, or, you know, and they will read it through. And then they read it through again, and they look for any words that they don't understand or can't spell. So they're looking at, and they're even looking at things like grammar and structure and different ways, you know, how it's all put together. And this is, you know, when you're starting, it's literally a couple of lines, a small paragraph you can start off. And as they get older, you can definitely start to do longer pieces. But and then so you're giving them time to study. And then what you give them some time, and sometimes, you know, some advise, and probably Charlotte Mason advise, that you do it there and then. So you have this time allotted. With a lot of children and a big family, often what I would do is I would set the dictation exercise and then say, we'll do it tomorrow. So in their independent study, you then take some time to learn how to spell those words within that text and how they, you know, how they sit. So what they're going to do then is they're going to take each of those words that they can't spell and just you again, this is Charlotte Mason's very much taught about visual memory. Mm-hmm. So the way to learn a word, how to spell a word, is that you look at it. You look at it, close your eyes. Can you see it in your mind? So you're actually visualizing it. Look at it again, close your eyes again, and then try writing it out. And it works. It's amazing. All my kids have learned to spell like that. It's just incredible. Wow. And even I will, if I find a word that I'm just stumbling over, I'll be like, okay, visualize it. So a lot of, and she, you know, we could be here for hours, you know, but she taught timetables like that. I mean, there's everything. Visualization is amazing. So they're doing that with these words. And then the dictation part is when they feel confident and ready that they can spell all those words, you take the piece of paper away for them, give them a blank piece of paper, and then you sit and dictate the piece to them and they write it out freehand, hopefully then spelling all the words correctly. You then look at it together afterwards to see how that went, and they will then look in, to see, okay, this one didn't quite go right. Generally, I honestly can say, and my kids are, you know, they're not, this is, I'm not saying, oh, they're super brilliant, but it's the method that is super brilliant. It's very rare that they get one wrong. Very, very rare, because you're saying to them, I'm not rushing you, but we're not going to, you know, until you're ready, we're not going to do this. So when you think you're ready, so you're actually, there is this intentional paying attention, visualizing, preparing for what they know is going to happen, which is that they're going to have to write this out in a few moments, or for my kids, often it's the day after. And yeah, where it fails is if you drag it on and forget to do the dictation, which I definitely have done. And my son's like, what was I doing with this again? I was like, oh no, sorry. Total failure, Charlotte Mason failure. So then you start again with another one. But anyway, these things happen. So that's prepared dictation. And I tend to do, once they're around 9 or 10, I start that process, start them small. Brilliant way for learning grammar, spelling, speech, you know, all that kind of speech. And as they progress, you do less and less and less. So what I tend to do is when they're first starting, I will tell them, okay, when I'm dictating, I will say comma, full stop. But actually the goal is they prepare the piece so that you don't have to do that eventually. And they know, okay, this is a new sentence. This is where the speech marks are. So, but that, I would say that's when they're kind of a little bit older and they've been doing it a while. So there is a real progression to it. People often say, how do you do Charlotte Mason with teens and with high schoolers? And my, again, I'm really simple about everything. I'm like, well, it's actually all the same, but just more advanced. That's my answer. I'm like, there's no rocket science about it. It's the same methodology and the same foundational ideas, but you just advance everything. You advance the reading, you advance the content, you lengthen the lesson slightly, and you know, that's it. Bingo. I, you know, nobody pays me to say that, but it's probably because it's not very sellable, is it?
I love it though. It gives me hope.
It's not difficult.
Yeah. No, we are at that. My oldest is right at that age. She's 10 now. And it was this summer that I was going to spend looking up dictation because we're ready to go to the next step. So it's also out of selfishness. I wanted to hear how you do dictation.
Absolutely. It's great. And my kids have always enjoyed it, actually. And it's like that little bit of one-on-one time. And I pick out really fun, like my son, he was doing some Tolkien stuff. He was, and then my daughter, when I started it with her, we used quotes from Narnia, sections from various books from the Chronicles of Narnia. So you're using engaging text, you know? And actually my middle son, we spent a lot of time doing famous speeches. So that was cool for him, just kind of getting to get to grips with that and the person who spoke. Yeah. So you can kind of cross over with their input and what they're grasping for it, but yeah, it's all
good. What a great tip. Yes, definitely. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't even thought, you know, sometimes you think like it has to be like from this book or from, you know, but to do something that they're engaged in is even better.
That's right.
It'll stick.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah.
Well, some parents I've spoken to feel that it's just too much to follow a Charlotte Mason curriculum program. I was actually speaking to a mom a couple weeks ago, because some of the moms in the group were sharing a lot of them are brand new to homeschooling. So they wanted to hear how everybody does their homeschool. And, you know, I brought up Charlotte Mason and she was like, oh, it's just, I looked into it and it was just too much, but I beg to differ. So what advice do you have for that parent wanting to get started with the method, but then want to avoid the overwhelm?
I mean, you're asking me, sorry, I'm laughing because I've never used a program. I've never followed a Charlotte Mason program.
Exactly. That's what I want to hear too, that you don't have to.
So I would be like, well, don't do it. You don't have to do it. And then they'd be like, well, so how do I do it? And that's where I would, you know, be like, okay, come on over. Let's go through it. So yes, which is a little bit facetious, I know. But the Charlotte Mason programs, well, there are so many out there now, absolutely tons. I kind of find new ones all the time, like, oh, didn't know about that. I did know about the one you just mentioned. And what they often are, as much as I know what I'm like, and I also am confident after years and years of doing this, I recognize, and I do say this often in my writing, is look, don't look at my 15-year confidence and my personality and expect that after 6 months, you are going to get that. You've got to do your journey. And if that journey means, you know, find a program that will help hinge that in a little bit for you, that you can hang a few things on. If that program points you back to the foundation and the philosophy, then do it. Mm-hmm. If the program is actually taking you more away from the foundation, the philosophy, and trying to create a crutch for you to lean on, then you might as well put your kids in school. I'm sorry, I know that's harsh, but you might as well, because what you're doing is just letting somebody else teach your children. Mm-hmm. And that's not what the Charlotte Mason philosophy is. Mm-hmm. The Charlotte Mason philosophy is actually believing in the child, providing the stimulus, and giving them freedom to it to find the meaning for themselves by narration and standing back. That is the heart of it. Now, again, I know, like, I am extreme other way. So what I would say is that's a good question to have. When I use this program, does it teach me more about Charlotte Mason philosophy, or does it just give me answers and boxes to tick? Because there are both. There are brilliant programs. The second thing is, feel free to follow a program, only follow half of it, chop it in half. Mm-hmm. So take, if you need help, if you need, your personality is more, is or your even your mental and emotional health is much better if you have something to lean on. I understand that, right? That's often a personality. Find a program, you know, shop around, ask around. There are loads of even free ones, like we've said, but don't do it all. Don't try to do it all. Cut it in half. I mean, I often say this to people about expectations and idealism within homeschooling. Make your lists, make your plans, and then cut them in half, and then start there. And if you finish one day, then give yourself a pat on the back, because actually all you're doing for yourself is setting yourself up for failure. Mm-hmm. And so you start these programs, and 2 weeks down the line, you're 2 weeks behind, and you're like, oh, catch up, catch up, catch up. nobody needs to feel like you. The kids don't need to see you like that. And I coach people. This is why I'm saying it with such conviction, because I have people book coaching calls with me and they say, I'm burnt out. I'm totally done. I'm exhausted. And I'm like, what have you been doing? Trying to follow a program and trying to follow it to the T. I'm failing my kids. I'm not doing enough. I'm behind. So I just say, scrap all that. Let's start from the beginning. What do you believe about children? What do you believe about education? So I think I can see the need for them. I can see the benefit of them. I also can see if this is different, this is cultural. If there is a need to form a high school transcript, all those kind of things, I can see how those are helpful. We don't have to do those here. Then go for it. But find one that helps you understand her and her philosophy more rather than creates a crutch for you. So I don't know if that answered your question. I'm trying to think what you actually asked me, but I don't want to. I think what my emphasis is on helping people find their freedom. Mm-hmm. And I know if that means finding a program that works for you. So I know people within our UK community who thrive on the Ambleside online curriculum. They love it and don't do everything. And often they're switching the books because for British children. But just love that sense of following something through, and they seem to have the right kids, the right personality, the right house set up, the right, to make it work. But all those factors are very real. If you've got a husband that works shifts and kids of all different ages, and you've got, minimal resources or there's all sorts going on, or you're caring for an elderly relative, you're not going to be able to make that work. You're not going to be able to tick boxes. So you have to be real. You have to look at your life situation, examine your personality. When I first started doing coaching, I used to get people to do a personality test because it was so helpful. I don't actually do it anymore, but it helped me tie together and understand, okay, that's what's going on. It's not, and I don't want to change you can't change a person, right, or who you are. Like, nobody honestly could make me follow a program. You can't force me to do that. I will buckle and I will cry, I will crumble. But I will take elements. I will be inspired by stuff. I will take things on because I am a learner. And I want to walk with the wise and become wise. I want to do that all the time. And I have good friends in the Charlotte Mason community that have helped me grow. But I know what my kids. I'm the expert on my kids. You're the expert on your kids. And that's where you got to go from, is this is not about me. This is about them. Mm-hmm. So, and that's a big deal. It might look nice on Instagram sometimes, but... if your children aren't thriving and if you're stressed out, it's not worth it. It's not worth it. I mean, Charlotte put a big emphasis on mothers growing, mothers learning, mothers thriving. And we will not do that by bowing to everything, buying everything, trying to live up to everything. You will do that by being yourself and being, free to be the whole person that you are. And that's really my story. With blood, sweat and tears along the way, absolutely. But that's what I fight for. And that's what I try and help others find.
So is that what inspires you to create your platform?
Yeah, I think so. I think, I didn't start sharing anything until I was about 7 or 8 years in, because I wanted to get my feet under the table, as it were. I wanted to have something to say. I wanted to some tried and tested time, and also just time with my kids to learn about them. I didn't want to start talking about a method and then it all backfire,
Yeah.
Kids are all over. And that's important. I think we are in a very public sharing era. Social media happened whilst I was raising children, and I'm not even that old, but it happened whilst, I think my first Instagram post was of my third child. Shows you how, when it came in. And so I just started doing a bit of blogging, but when it really took off for me, and I think when I really was about 7 or 8 years in, this app called Periscope took off, which is the beginnings of video, live videos, video streaming. So this app came on, someone told me about it, and I've been doing a little bit of blogging. I'm not very consistent with stuff like that. And but I've always done speaking, public speaking. That's been something I've done since I was 18. So I felt more natural about that kind of thing and just started to talk. And I can't believe I did this, but I used to do, my kids would have a quiet time after lunch, like a nap time, or if they were young enough, they'd nap. If they were a bit older, they'd play for half an hour on their beds or sit quietly. And I, on a Tuesday and a Thursday, I went live for half an hour, and it was called The Charlotte Mason Show. And, you know, it's funny because by then I'd not even read all six volumes. I didn't know half of what I knew now. I'd not implemented half of what I've implemented now. And I just went for it. I was like, I'm just going to share all the things and see what I, you know, and just kind of have a go at this and see what I know. And shit. And people flocked, because I didn't, what I didn't realize is that I started to say something different, which was, hey, you can do what you want with this, you know, this is, and when you actually look into the story of Charlotte Mason and the people it impacted and the people who spoke about her, they all said, she didn't leave any recipes behind. She never thought this was the be all and end all. She said it was one idea. She never meant for us to follow something to the T. She actually wanted to us to understand childhood and education in this way that we could run with it ourselves. And this is where people get mixed up. You see, this is where people can get stressed or feeling the pressure, is that there were these programs called the PNEU programs, which were needed because they were for the school system. So if you're teaching a classroom, then you need a plan. I would not walk in. Well, maybe I would walk into a classroom without a plan, but it wouldn't be great. So they created this correspondence course, this program, because she'd found, okay, these books are amazing. This is all. And she found this structure was working in the schools, and there was a sequence to it all, and people wanted the help and they wanted that. But actually, we've kind of seen all this. This is where you get things like Ambleside Online. And, you know, it's very similar to the original PNEU programs. And I, even though I knew all that, I saw that, I just took, there's an amazing story about a missionary, Amy Carmichael. And Charlotte Mason sent all her books out, or the books that were available then. Amy Carmichael was teaching children in India and she needed some help. Charlotte sends her books over. Amy Carmichael said, I am teaching Indian children, not British children. I want to raise them in their culture. It's really important. So she said, this is what she said. She said, I read the books and I took the roots and the trunk of the philosophy and I applied it to the culture I was in. Well, if you think about your family as a culture, if you think about your each individual family, I'm not raising, you know, an American family. I'm not raising a Victorian family. I am raising a British 21st century Christian family in Coventry in England. So how do I take this philosophy, the roots and the trunk, and apply it? That's been my work, really. That has been what I've been doing. And that's why I share what I do.
Yeah, you mentioned that you do coaching, but you also have the Charlotte Mason Unboxed course. Yes. And I actually signed up for that. And I'm still at the beginning of it. Really, it's because I've been slowly working over the past couple years at ways to kind of shape Charlotte Mason's philosophy to shape it around our family, like you said, our family culture. And what I was just super excited when I saw that your course was catered just for that, because I can't tell you how many people I've like listened to, or websites I've read, or programs on Charlotte Mason. And I just feel like so much of it still speaks as if we're living back then, or that they're trying to follow her to the T. And I'm just like, it's not going to work here. Like, it's just not.
It's not. It's not. And eventually it breaks you.
Yes.
I don't know who can do that.
Right.
I think if, you know, maybe they're pretending, who knows, but it's okay. You don't have to anymore. Here's our permission slip just to be yourself.
Right. Yes. And that's why I love your platform for that. So I truly encourage our listeners to check your stuff out. I'm really enjoying the Unbox course. I really am.
Thank you.
And I'm hoping that it's going to continue to help me find my own way with our family, because that's what I'm trying to. And it's also part of that whole deschooling process. Like I have to just continue to let go of what I think learning's supposed to look like, and that it doesn't have to be rigorous.
Right.
So there's that too. But I love what you're doing.
Thank you.
So along with your platform, are there any particular books or resources that you would recommend for somebody starting off to help them understand this better?
There are so many, and okay. I am writing one currently, which will be unfortunately not with you all for another year, but longer than that, because the publishing world takes forever. But there are so many wonderful resources. I would recommend an author called Karen Glass. Karen is one of the original creators, directors. I can't remember what the title would be of the Ambleside Online program. She's an American, lives in Poland, I believe, but I've interviewed her. She's great. We've crossed paths on, you know, digitally, unfortunately, because of COVID, it's all been digitally, but she is incredible. And she is, I'm trying to look on my bookshelf now. I think she's maybe written three and co-authored another one. Hers are wonderful. Her books on, she's got one on narration, which is fantastic. Mm-hmm. She's got one on this aspect of those foundational principles, children are born persons and the science of relations. Really recommend her book. She's very knowledgeable, really experienced, but writes for the home educator. There are, I always recommend people, if they can, you know, read the volumes. They have them free all over, as in online, but there's nothing quite like having the book in your hand. And they have been printed by a couple of different publishers now, so they're out there. There was a time when they were quite scarce, but do get into them. Read volume one, especially if you've got children under the age of 9, mm-hmm. and just keep rereading that one for a while. You're fine with that. Also, but LibriVox, which is the free online kind of books in the public domain audio platform, there's some wonderful ladies on there who have recorded their work. I don't know how far through they are. I'm sure there's at least the first three on there now.
Really?
And it's not easy. I've tried reading them aloud for like social media, things like that. And I love reading aloud, but I've never finished reading aloud a whole book, because I think I'm a little bit like, I'm sure I've anyway, I lose, because I kind of get, oh, another idea and I'll do this. So yeah, don't rely on me for those projects. But it's amazing that I'm getting a book out, isn't it? So, but there are people who are very good long-term project concentration. I'm obviously a starter and a pioneer rather than a finisher. And they have got the books for free to listen to. So
wonderful. I didn't know that.
Yes. The only thing with LibriVox is at the beginning of every chapter, they have to say, this is a LibriVox recording. Yes. So it does break the flow up. But I'll do, you know, I've read them. And I think also there's a new, there's one in modern English as well. But I've looked into it, but I just like, I don't think it's difficult to understand. I think you just have to take it slowly.
Right.
And I was saying this to somebody, a podcast the other day. I said, my story with the volumes, especially with volume one, when I first started, was I would read and get completely, my mind would be blown, and I'd just kind of put it into practice. So she talked about nature study, or she talked about books. I would kind of take, read it and do it, read it, do it, read it, do it. And that really strengthened the foundations for our journey, was that I wasn't in a rush to get through everything. But it's taken me years to do all the reading, and I continue. I mean, books come out all the time, and I try and read everything that's out there. Some are on my shelf and unread yet, but yeah, it's great. I love hearing other people's perspective or the philosophy and how it's looked for them. This is interesting.
Yeah, that's wonderful. I like your tip too of read it and then do it, read it and do it. Cause I have, I've never tried to tackle a volume yet. I think I'm intimidated, but maybe you've encouraged me to start with volume one like that.
Just you kind of got to get over that. Cause I don't know where the intimidation is, cause you seem like a super smart lady. And if that intimidation has come from other people, just ignore them. Leah says, read it.
Well, I think what might help, it's me and reading. Like I can read stuff for my children, but okay. I fail at reading stuff for me. I think because it ends up being like the time of day. And so what I do love are audiobooks, because I can multitask right. with audiobooks. Yes. And I'm yes. good at listening. Like some people are like, I can't do something while I'm listening to book.
Oh, I can.
It's why I love podcasts. So.
Me too. I'm the same. I do, you know, it's my kids are older, so I can carve out, but to read wide, like I do, I have to be very intentional.
Yes.
Like this is my reading time, but I do audiobooks tons and podcasts. I love them. Yeah.
So I'm glad you shared that it's on LibriVox because I do LibriVox for our kids' books, but I didn't know about her volumes.
Yeah.
So let's check it out.
Now you know.
All right. For the sake of time, I'm going to try to wrap up the last couple questions. I know it's hard to always answer these quickly, but we know that we're shining a light on home education because we all love it. And that's what this whole podcast and series is about. But I just want other parents to also know that we're real people. So is there maybe one thing that you could say is like your biggest struggle with home education?
Yeah, I think my struggle generally with home education is I am the pioneer. I am the starter. I am definitely not a finisher. So I think to my kids, even sometimes pushing through to finish a book or pushing through to finish a project to the end is not my strong point. But for the sake of my children, I've had to really, you know, so we'll be halfway through a book and I'll start to think, oh, this is not great. I'm not, but they'll be enjoying it still. And I'm like, I'm reading it aloud thinking, oh, it's not great, this book. But I have to finish. They're like, come on, let's finish this book because they're loving it. So I know that's a personality thing, is that I'm much more than I'm an enthusiastic starter. But what I've learned about myself is just doing things small and frequently. Like regularity is actually easier than consistency. That's another conversation altogether. But telling yourself, you don't have to do this every day at 3 o'clock. It's have it a regular part of your rhythm. That's why for me, rhythm is better than schedule.
Yes.
You know, it's all language creates culture. So all these words have helped me. So some of the things I've struggled with over the years is my kids are like, we never finished that project, or we made that volcano and we never blew it up, or, you know, I'll start new notebooks all the time.
You sound like me. And I can't, my kids do that too. They like hold me accountable. I'm like, you're really making me feel bad.
Yeah. And I think just on a kind of some of the real challenges to homeschooling over the years for me have been the crossover of the parenting and the teaching. So, you know, there've been years when children have been genuinely struggling with various things and they can monopolize the whole day and you can feel like, oh, I've done nothing. Mm-hmm. And I think I had to learn to switch my thinking around all that. And my husband helped with that a lot, is actually, even if you spent the whole day helping a relationship or helping a child deal with some anger issue or some insecurity or a hostage negotiation, whatever it is, that actually that is also the work of educating your children from home, is about character and life and parenting. But I used to struggle with that because I would have this beautiful plan and then a child would have a meltdown at 9 a.m. and if it was a bad meltdown, it would linger on in, you know, throughout the day. Mm-hmm. And my husband would come home and be like, oh, it's been awful, I didn't get anything done. He's like, actually, you did. Look, she's happy now and you've resolved it. Mm-hmm. Or we've resolved it. So that they're probably, you know, again, all to do with me, really. It's mm-hmm. personality stuff. It's recognizing that. And that's all about growing, is saying, this is, I know some of the things that I'm not great at. Being vulnerable with your kids, telling them that, saying sorry lots, you know. And, you know, I honestly can say, 15 years on, that I love it as much, if not a lot more today than I ever have done. It's a joy and it's a privilege. I hear of lots of homeschool mums who've been doing it as long as me and longer, and they kind of are dragging and just like, oh, just get it done, you know. I love it and it's a privilege. And this is, I wrote it on something recently, but that it's my job and it's my joy. And it's actually, the time is really fleeting. And now in my house, I've got, you know, an adult, 2 teenagers and a 10-year-old. That is crazy. I was the one with the babies and breastfeeding and toddlers, you know, and doing all the painting and the preschool stuff. But now I'm the mum with an adult. It's really fleeting. So it just makes you treasure the days more. And then you, you know, keep recognizing where you can grow as a mum.
I love that. It's very beautifully put. I recently came across that feeling too, where some people had questioned like, oh, do you miss nursing? Like, that's where you need to be. And I'm like, no, like I actually genuinely feel that this is my calling. I mean, we're all called to parenthood. And then even more so, like this is true parenthood now, just being every step of the way with them and being able to see our children flourish and then seeing their bonds with one another just grow. It's been amazing. So I couldn't agree more with you. All right. So these are the last two questions. Okay. So if you could hand a book to every new person you met, what would it be? I know it's hard.
I suddenly remembered. It's a podcast. Are we filming? I'm doing a face. If you're just listening, I've got my palm to my face. So I'm going to be totally rebellious. I don't have one. This is what I would say to somebody. Okay. I would say read wide and read regularly. This is the three things I do for reading. I read for devotion, I read for delight, and I read for depth. So they're the three things I do. So devotional, whether you're a person of faith or not, but you can always read for your inner life. It might be poetry. It could be small, short readings, but I read for devotion. I read for delight. So I read novels and fiction, things that are fun, keep my life in story. Mm-hmm. And I read for depth. I read that for things that keep me thinking and stretch me and might take me years to read or months and months to read, but actually I need to be growing and learning. So they're the three reasons I read, and they're the three kind of books I look for in my stacks. I honestly, with all integrity, I could not tell you what one book, you know, outside of the Bible, if you want me to say that, guys. It's the good book, but
it's a good book,
but you know, you can see a part of my library here.
I see it.
But books are incredible. And I just think keep reading wide. Just read really wide and read regularly. Even if it's like a paragraph a day, just keep it going. Keep it going. So good for you. It keeps you growing.
Love it. Love it. That was great advice. All right. And then the final one, if you knew you could only leave one last piece of wisdom for your children, what would it be?
Be kind. That's definitely kindness is so powerful. It is reciprocal and it's not difficult. And you know, I would say if you're going to get married, marry somebody kind. If you want to make friends, be around people and make friends with people who are kind. And be like, kindness be on your lips, let kindness be out of your actions, because it just keeps things beautiful and it's so simple. And I say it a lot, like, guys, be kind. We can be kind with our words and our actions. And it's a challenge to me all the time as well, but I think that's important.
Wonderful. And great way to end it. So where can our listeners find you?
I am on Facebook, Instagram, Modern Miss Mason. And basically if you type in Leah Bowden or Modern Miss Mason, I do have two Instagram accounts, because it's very, very focused is the Modern Miss Mason account. If you're interested in my out of hours life, gardening, family, then I do have a Leah Bowden account. And either of those, all my links, if you go to any of the bios in any of those places, there's a Linktree link where you can find my courses, coaching,
podcast.
That's right. Season three will be, I've got to finish my book. That's the thing that I've got to do before I start the new season, but podcast should be back. My husband, I was making plans and started to email people and he said, stop planning for your podcast.
Finish the finisher.
This is a problem, isn't it? It really is. So I am learning so much and I have got to finish this book. I'm nearly there. And I'm already excited about new projects. It'll be a miracle if you get this book in my hand. Yes. So podcast, and it's a little while before the book. I will keep people posted about that, but definitely. It is called Modern Miss Mason.
Okay, wonderful. Well, thank you so much, Leah, for joining us today. It was such a pleasure. This was such a wonderful conversation. I know that you had to hold back on going down rabbit holes because there is so much to be said about Charlotte Mason.
So much.
But you did wonderful. And I think it's a great start, at least for our listeners, in getting to know her better. So thank you so much for your time today.
It's a pleasure. Thank you for having me on.
All right. Well, take care. We want to thank Lia for joining us today. It was a pleasure having her on, as we are reminded to see the child as a whole and do what works for your family culture. We also want to thank all of you for joining us around the campfire once more. All links will be added to the show notes. And as always, let's light a fire they can't put out.